Welcome back to Open Line. I'm Charlene Brown. We're going to begin today with a discussion of a proposed constitutional amendment that would create a state board to oversee the care of Ohio's poultry and livestock. Supporters say it would help ensure food safety and humane treatment of animals raised for food, but the Humane Society of the U.S. says Ohio farmers should change their treatment of farm animals, and it wants to ban several types of confining cages that are commonly used on large-scale farms. We have representatives of both the agricultural industry view and the Humane Society's position on this issue. They are Keith Stimpert, Senior Vice President of Public Policy for the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, and Paul Shapiro, Senior Director of the Factory Farming Campaign for the Humane Society of the United States. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Charlene.
Thanks, Charlene.
This amendment would create a board called the Ohio Livestock Care Standards Board, a 13-member body that would do what?
The basic point of this board is essentially a handout to the big agribusiness lobby, because what it would do is ensure that pretty much the status quo remains within the agribusiness industry here in Ohio. It's a board that was pushed by the Farm Bureau. It was approved by the legislature in just 2 days, and it's something that is so blatantly a power grab that the Columbus Dispatch has editorialized against it, saying it's the wrong approach. The Cleveland Plain Dealer found the proposal so disgusting that they called it, and I quote, hogwash. The Akron Beacon Journal has editorialized against this proposal. It really is little more than a handout to special interest groups like the Farm Bureau that want to enshrine in the state's constitution their own favored system of oversight.
Okay. That's a reaction to what you believe the board would do. Paul, can you explain what the Farm Bureau believes this Keith, would you explain what the Farm Bureau expects this board to do?
Well, I think what we're really talking about here is far from the status quo. In fact, a chance for Ohio to lead the way in terms of livestock care. We want to bring all voices to the table relative to care. So we're talking about a 13-member panel that would be composed of members of the general public, veterinarians, farmers, someone from a local humane society, on and on, to bring all these interests together and help establish those standards under which livestock would be cared for in the state of Ohio.
What kinds of standards govern the care of livestock right now?
Basically, there are abuse standards and there are standards relative to transportation of animals and so on and so forth in the state of Ohio. But we're talking about the actual practices of raising animals today, of livestock today.
The dispute, as far as I can tell, centers on a specific set of enclosures that are used for animals, gestation stalls, veal crates, and battery cages that are used for chickens. Could you explain for me, Keith, what each one of those is and how it's used?
Well, these are practices that are used on many farms today, not all farms. You know, we have in Ohio the choice of choosing practices used on different farms and the foods and where they come from. But basically, in the case of pregnant sows, we're talking about a stall that basically keeps her safe during her pregnancy.
And I understand they're about 7 feet by 2 feet?
Yeah, approximately, yeah.
And the animal just stands in that stall?
It can lay down as well, yes, and well cared for in terms of food and water. And so that's the practice there. Otherwise, we get into issues of fighting and abuse and the potential for that sow to fall down and as it moves around on the floor during pregnancy. So it's really for the safety of the animal that we're using it, a stall there for gestating sows.
Okay, and battery cages, what are those?
Basically, we're talking about cage layers or cages that laying hens. This is for eggs. And so, putting together a system or a practice that, again, minimizes disease and allows for maximum care for that animal.
Okay. These cages are not very big. I read one description that said they're about the size of a file drawer and there are 4 or 5 hens in each one.
There are. And there are varying sizes of cages that are used across the country.
Okay. And veal crates.
basically individual stalls. And I need to point out here, in the case of veal, most veal production in the state of Ohio has moved to open housing. So there are probably some stalls somewhere. But basically, when we talk about the veal industry today, we're into open housing. And so that particular practice not used as much as it has been. But again, we're talking an individual stall that allows the farmer to examine that, care for that animal, feed that animal, and examine, for changing health conditions as we move forward. So, I think really, as we talk about these individual practices, there are definite trade-offs between individual practices out across the farm, and if we maximize or we go one way with allowing more space, we may have a trade-off in some other aspect of maybe increasing disease or causing more infighting or something like that in the animal. So I think even the American Veterinary Medical Association points out that no one system is necessarily better than another. There are definite trade-offs. And really what our panel is about here, this board of livestock care, is trying to get about a very intelligent discussion of livestock care in the state of Ohio and one that can consider all factors.
And let me just clarify, mm-hmm. these sure. are practices that are generally used on very, very large farms.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Charlene. These forms of extreme confinement of farm animals are typically used by some of the larger industrialized agribusiness operations. And in the case of, let's just say, battery cages for egg-laying hens, I mean, we're talking about cramming, as you noted, about five birds into a cage so small that each animal has less space than a single sheet of paper on which to live for more than a year before they're slaughtered. I mean, it really is hard to imagine a more miserable existence. The same is really true for gestating pigs who are kept in these 2-foot-wide cages barely larger than their own bodies, where they're unable even to turn around for 4 months. They're not kept in there necessarily for their safety. They're kept in there because it's cheaper to cram animals into cages that minimize space usage oftentimes. These three systems, though, are so inherently cruel and inhumane that the entire European Union has already legislated against them. 6 states in the U.S. have legislated against some or all of them. And animal scientists and veterinarians are speaking out against them because the science is clear that confining these animals in cages barely larger than their own bodies, in which they can hardly move an inch their entire lives, is not only detrimental to their welfare, but it's also bad for food safety.
But these are methods that have been used for quite some time now. I don't have an exact number of years, very commonly in the industry. So what is the objection? It provides food for us to eat. These are animals that are going to be slaughtered for us to eat anyway.
You're absolutely right, Charlene. They have been used for some time, and I think it's a case where it's not necessarily that farmers want to treat animals cruelly, but it's a case where a bad practice has become the norm. It's not a mere case of just a few rotten eggs. These are inherently cruel and inhumane practices that have become standardized within the industry. These practices are so extreme. They're so far out of step with mainstream Ohioan values about how we ought to treat animals that the agribusiness groups recognize this, and that's why they're acting preemptively to try to thwart any type of meaningful reform by creating this industry-dominated council. You're right, Charlene, that these animals will be eaten, but I don't think that gives us license to treat them in such an abusive manner before they go to the slaughter plant. We can raise animals for food without cramming them into cages and crates. We can allow them to have a very basic, modest freedom of movement, simply to be able to turn around and extend their limbs, for example. And poll after poll shows that Ohioans want animals not to be confined in these types of crates, but instead to be able to engage in basic movement.
I have not spent time on farms, was not raised on a farm. Keith, maybe you can help me understand, how much time do these animals get outside of their enclosures just to walk around and stretch?
Basically, for the sow, that's during gestation, so that they're in
while
that
they're
stall,
pregnant,
right? And then, in the case of the hens, they're actually that is where they remain. But again,
so they
for
spend
max,
their, they spend their
yeah,
lives in these cages.
They do.
The
and
hens
for
do.
Max,
and the sows spend how many months do they or weeks do they spend?
3 months,
pregnant?
3 weeks, 3 days.
Exactly. Three months, three days. That's their gestation period.
Yeah, gestation period for a sow.
And then they're taken out and allowed to roam around?
Let me say something about Let me say something about Paul said the science is clear. When I talk to vets at Ohio State University, and incidentally, the university is doing tremendous work here in this area, trying to evaluate all aspects of animal care. To say that the science is clear is really misleading the public, and I think that's unfortunate. Paul's science might be clear, but in fact, when we talk to vets, we talk about where we are. We know there are natural trade-offs between disease, between infighting, between the care of that animal. And so I think that's very, very unfortunate. The other thing is big business. The people who came – or big agribusiness, as he characterized those who are using these practices. When I see a 10th-generation farmer come in here, when I see family farmers coming from Paulding County, Carroll County, so on and so forth, into the State House to talk about how they would like to approach – livestock care with a comprehensive board that will look at all factors. That's all we're saying. We're not saying that one practice or another will not be used in the state of Ohio. We're talking about a comprehensive board
that can deal with the
science behind this.
Paul, your objection to the composition of the board and what is envisioned for them to do, why are you objecting to that? It sounds like it would be a good safeguard for the treatment of animals.
Well, I think that you have to look at the motives behind those who are proposing this. We're talking about folks who have vigorously opposed any form of agricultural regulation for the most part for decades successfully. Now, all of a sudden, that there's been discussion about having a proposed ballot measure similar to what other states have enacted that would require that these animals be able to turn around and extend their limbs. The Farm Bureau all of a sudden has very quickly gotten religion, saying that not only do we need regulation, but they need it in the state's constitution to enshrine in there their own favored system, which is stacked with many people who I think it's very likely are going to recommend the status quo. Now, I'm glad that Keith brings up the science, because I do want to just make a brief point about this. Keith mentions, quote, Paul's science. In reality, we're talking about science by a number of very prestigious panels. Just for example, the Pew Commission on Industrialized Farm Animal Production was funded by the Pew Charitable Trust and the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. They included scientists, veterinarians, researchers, cattle ranchers, even the former Secretary of Agriculture, Dan Glickman, and they studied this very issue. For 2.5 years, they held hearings all over the country, visited farms, consulted with researchers, and after 2.5 years of exhaustive study, these prestigious commissioners last year unanimously concluded that battery cages, veal crates, and gestation crates all need to be phased out. The most comprehensive analysis ever done on laying hen welfare, a project called the Laywell Project, which looked at 230 flocks of birds from 7 different nations. Those scientists, after they looked at the science, said that battery cages cannot provide adequate welfare. There is an abundance of science demonstrating what common sense already knows, that is that animals who have been built to move ought to be able to move.
And Keith, your reaction to that is
well, I don't think this panel is – I'm talking about the approach. I think if you want to talk about the science behind these things, I think you ought to have 2 veterinarians in here. I don't think we're talking about the public policy response to care in the state of Ohio and how we can preserve consumer choice with regard to our diets. To say that this panel is stacked when it's appointed by the governor, we have no idea who might be on this. We'd have veterinarians. We would have Humane Society representatives. We would have farmers. We'd have the general public, on and on. To prejudge the decisions that this panel might make, I really is beyond me, because we're trying to say, let's be a leader in the area of animal care. Let's bring together a panel that can look at all aspects of animal care. And there's nothing here about trying to stymie improved care for livestock. Farmers have cared for livestock forever and still do.
Question, why does that need to be part of the state constitution? Isn't there some legislative way or some independent way to do the same thing? Why do we have to change the state constitution to protect the animals?
Good question. And I think there's nothing really unusual when you look at this particular idea. When Paul cites editorial board saying that they're opposed to it, in fact, the concept of a board of Ohioans to deal with this issue is not what they're arguing about. They're talking about whether or not it should be in the Constitution. fact of the matter is there are many things dealing with general welfare that are dealt with in our Constitution. There are other boards like our Workers' Compensation Board that are named in the Constitution. And there are things like how we are going to make capital expenditures on parks and recreation dealt with. I think the care of our livestock on farms today measures up to that kind of area, such as capital expenditure on parks and recreation. But in the main, if we do not give Ohioans the chance to vote on a comprehensive approach to livestock care, I think we're going to be vulnerable to a series of legislative measures and even ballot measures maybe that do not look comprehensively at the issue of livestock care.
We've been talking to Keith Stimpert, who is Senior Director of Senior Vice President of Public Policy for the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, and Paul Shapiro, who is Senior Director of the Factory Farming Campaign for the Humane Society of the United States. If you'd like to voice your opinion, ask a question, give us a call at 292-8513 or send an email to openline@wosu.org. And in fact, we have a call right now from Tom. Hi, Tom. You have a question for our guests?
Yes, I do.
Okay, go ahead.
The Ohio Farmers Union urges the United States Humane Society and the Farm Bureau to negotiate a settlement. Instead, the Farm Bureau, on February the 17th, 2009, removed themselves from the table. The evidence to the inhumane treatment and practices on these factory farms is undeniable. So why did you, the Farm Bureau, break off negotiations?
Well, first of all, we have taken the concerns of the Humane Society of the United States very, very seriously. Yes, we did meet in February, and I think that is worthy of note. We have Paul coming down to our radio show. We have Paul speaking to our young farmers in the end of August. So we're engaged on this discussion. And I don't think we broke off any kind of negotiation. Our focus is the state of Ohio and how we produce food here. And we've been engaged with the governor. We've been engaged with Senate president. We've been engaged with Speaker of the House, all legislators, talking about how can we best deal with this particular issue. So our focus is on the state of Ohio. And I think we're taking these concerns very, very seriously.
Tom, thanks so much for your call. I certainly appreciate it, and I think you're right to note that the Farm Bureau and the Humane Society did meet last February. The Humane Society reached out to the Farm Bureau asking them to negotiate with us. Unfortunately, the Farm Bureau, after meeting with us, refused to have any discussions for about 5 months. And there was basically silence until they resurfaced publicly on the issue with a stealth under the radar plan that they rushed through the legislature within just a couple days to, as the Cleveland Plain Dealer editorialized, to preempt any type of meaningful reform. The Plain Dealer asserted in its editorial against this plan. This is a classic case of state house preemption, and again, they called it hogwash. I agree with the Ohio Farmers Union that it would have been far preferable to sit down and have all the stakeholders at the table and have the Farm Bureau and the Humane Society sit down and negotiate. That's what's happened in other states such as Colorado and Maine, where the agricultural interest groups there have taken a very different, less provocative approach that the Ohio Farm Bureau has taken. But I appreciate the Ohio Farmers Union's leadership in calling for that negotiation.
Tom, thank you for your call. This call is from Michael. Hi, Michael. You're on Open Line. You have a question or a comment for our guests?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It concerns me that the Farm Bureau is defending confining animals in cages so small they can't move their entire life. When the Farm Bureau says that Ohio should be a leader on animal welfare, it's hard to be a leader when other states have banned these cruel and inhumane practices. And my question is for the gentleman from the Humane Society, what has other farmers done? What have they done in other states to move away from these practices?
Well, thanks, Michael, for your call. I appreciate it. Six states have enacted reforms to these extreme confinement practices: Florida, Arizona, Colorado, Maine, California, and Arizona. And essentially, they've required that certain farm animals be able to stand up, lie down, turn around, and extend their limbs. Ohio voters, by a wide margin, support that type of a similar measure, which is exactly why the Farm Bureau is trying to preempt that type of a measure by trying to amend the state's constitution here. But what the farmers in those types of states have done is they're moving away from these extreme confinement practices toward more open housing systems, not necessarily free range. I mean, we're not talking about animals living on old McDonald's farm. We're talking about giving animals just enough space to turn around and extend their limbs, which improves their welfare. It improves food safety. And in fact, many family farmers have been spokespeople for those campaigns. For example, in California last year, where voters overwhelmingly approved a measure to prevent this type of animal cruelty, more than 100 California family farmers endorsed that campaign. We had cattle ranchers as spokespeople. These are campaigns that people from the humane community and the family farming community can join together to support, because it really is a common ground issue, the humane treatment of animals.
Keith?
Well, I think we're not trying to evade the issue. I think we're trying to put together a comprehensive. Paul wants to talk about one particular practice. He wants to bring in a Washington lobbyist and two Hollywood actors to try to educate Ohio about
are you talking about? Actors and lobbyists.
I'm talking about Wayne Pacelle, and I'm talking about the actors that they have used in terms of ballot issues across the state of Ohio or across the country to try to educate people about this. Versus that kind of education in the state of Ohio on animal care versus convening a panel of experts, of people knowledgeable of animal care, and asking them to look at all aspects of animal behavior and the science behind that, and to say, in the state of Ohio, we're going to do this, we're not going to do that. I don't think that's the status quo. I think that's a very intelligent approach to this particular issue, and I think it's one that, frankly, the Humane Society of the United States ought to actually support.
Is the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation willing to support changes in the kinds of enclosures that the large farms in particular use?
I think
like the kind that he described in California and the other states that have adopted this?
We support consumer choice, and there needs to be the opportunity for folks to purchase food from any production practice that they care to. When we look at simply eliminating one particular practice, we're not seeing the whole picture relative to local food production, relative to the actual care of the animal and the balance of different needs of that animal. We're not getting that when we simply reduce it to one simple question about whether or not the animal should be able to turn around. I can create my own little simple question too. Shouldn't farmers use practices that minimize fighting and cannibalistic behavior? I think I can get most people to agree to that question, just like Paul's question, shouldn't animals be allowed to turn around? All I'm saying is, and all our organization is saying, and the family farmers that it represents, let's convene a panel. Let's be more intelligent about how we approach this issue. And in fact, let's be a leader on animal care, livestock care in this country.
Do the animals fight because you would have so many of them jammed together in a limited area?
Yeah,
or would they fight if you had a half dozen of them walking around in a pen somewhere?
There are some natural destructive behaviors that animals have. And so what we're trying to do is minimize, the incidence of disease and the amount of fighting that we might have between animals and other aspects that are harmful to that animal.
I think that it's pretty clear. Let me just first say that I actually agree with Keith that no system is perfect, that there are pros and cons to all systems. At the same time, some systems are so inherently inhumane that regardless of how they are managed, they just cannot provide adequate welfare for the animals. And these three examples, battery cages, veal crates, and gestation crates, are prime examples of systems in which the so-called welfare ceiling is so low that really they just shouldn't be used. I mean, these systems are so detrimental to the welfare of animals that regardless of how they're managed, the animals will suffer immensely.
So you want Ohio farmers to stop using these particular enclosures, period?
These three practices are being phased out throughout the entire world. Like I said, all 27 member nations of the European Union have already legislated against them. They're being phased out in six states, varying. Some of them have legislated a little bit differently. But
and these six states passed this over, what, the last couple of years?
From 2002 through today. And but to answer your question directly, yes, absolutely, we should phase these practices out. Now, nobody is expecting anyone to move mountains in minutes. I mean, the California law was enacted in 2008 and doesn't really take effect until the year 2015. We understand that farmers need time to transition to higher welfare, higher food safety systems. And so we're not suggesting that this happen overnight, but we are suggesting that we begin moving away from the most cruel and inhumane confinement systems towards systems that do a better job of taking into account the animal's welfare.
We have an email now from Adam. He says, while speaking before the National Association of Farm Broadcasting in April, Humane Society of the United States President Wayne Pacelli said the following, quote, like any kind of sophisticated political operation, you use the best research tools in order to drive your message. But in terms of our policy formulations, I can't think of a time that we've done research. It sounds like Adam is saying this now. It sounds like an admission that HSUS does not conduct any scientific research when writing their legislation. Does the Humane Society of the U.S. do any research on animal care, animal behavior, or food safety when making policy?
The Humane Society of the United States is not an academic institution. What we do is we use the science that is available out there, and that formulates our policy positions. As I mentioned before, there have been several exhaustive scientific analyses that have demonstrated that these systems are bad for animal welfare and they're bad for food safety. So it's not – I mean, I suspect that the Farm Bureau wouldn't be persuaded by Humane Society-funded research anyway, but the point is that we're citing research that's being done by independent commissions like the Pew Commission on Industrial Farm Animal Production, like huge analyses of farms in Europe, like numerous other studies that have been done both in the U.S. and in Canada on farm animal welfare, which confirm what we're saying, which is quite commonsensical, that animals ought to be able to engage in basic movement.
I would just say that to contrast that with the investment that farmers make each and every year with their own money in research on animal care. Pork producers, for example, over the last 11 years, $3.5 million in animal research, some 68 different projects to try to improve care standards on the farm. So, you know, we're engaged. We have been. And as I say, farmers care about the livestock that they produce.
All right. We have a call now from Bill. Hello, Bill. You're on Open Line.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a very important program. I would just like to say, as someone who's actually been inside one of these operations, I just want to say that any thoughtful person that sees this treatment firsthand would understand how inhumane these places are. I mean, even conservative spokesperson George Will wrote a piece called What We Owe, What We Eat. And he's not a vegetarian. And he basically said, we at least owe these animals some kind of basic care before we slaughter. And my question to Paul is, obviously this is a preemptive attack to keep you from doing a statewide initiative or a constitutional amendment now. My question is, does this keep you from looking at doing an amendment to the Ohio's Constitution to counter this?
Well, let me hold up right there. We need to take a short break here. Stand by, Bill. We'll get an answer to your question right after this brief break, and we'll have more on Open Line.
This week, don't be too disappointed. We've got a guest junkie.
Even though it is unconventional and it's not so comfortable.
We'll talk the politics of healthcare and, of course, Mrs. Palin.
And I really wish that you would hear more from the media. More.
I'm Neil Conan. That's right. More with the Political Junkie. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon. It starts at 2 o'clock, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. And good morning, I'm Amy Jarovich. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning, currently 72 degrees in downtown Columbus. Time Team America goes deep into the trenches of America's most intriguing archaeological sites. Tonight, the team goes in search of our nation's mysterious roots at Roanoke Island. Watch Time Team America tonight at 8 p.m. on WOSU TV. And WOSU Public Media presents the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday Forum, today at noon. Find out about the potential of algae farming and CO2 emissions for food and fuel, featuring Univenture founder Ross Youngs. Visit columbusmetroclub.org for tickets and more information. Taking a look at the weather forecast, sunny skies today and a high right around 80 degrees. Clear skies tonight and a low right around 60. Sunshine for Thursday and a high of 82. And sunshine for Friday as well. You're listening to Open Line on WOSU.
Welcome back. I'm Charlene Brown. We've been talking about a proposed constitutional amendment here in Ohio that would create a state board to oversee care of Ohio poultry and livestock. We're talking to Keith Stimpert of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and Paul Shapiro of the Humane Society of the United States. Just before the break, Bill, our caller, had a question about basic care of animals and whether this constitutional amendment would keep the Humane Society from going ahead with a ballot initiative on animal care. Your answer.
Thanks for your call, Bill. And our hope all along, as we expressed to the Farm Bureau last February, has been not to do a ballot initiative. These are costly campaigns. They're often polarizing. We've really bent over backwards to try to avert that from happening. But the Farm Bureau's very provocative move here essentially forces our hand. Now, even if their proposed amendment is enacted into the Constitution, no, it does not prohibit us from running our own initiative. But as the Cleveland Plain Dealer editorialized, the purpose of it really, and I quote, is so that the big farm lobby will be able to argue that any initiative their opponents might propose in 2010 is unnecessary and redundant. I think that's really one of the reasons why I agree with the Plain Dealer on that, one of the reasons why the Farm Bureau likely wants to do this. Now, Bill also mentioned conservative columnist George Will, and I think it's an important point that compassion for animals is not a partisan issue, that in states that have approved these measures, we've seen majorities of both Republicans and Democrats voting in favor of these type of modest reforms. In fact, in California, majorities not only of Republicans and Democrats, blacks and whites, Latinos, but also urban and rural voters in majorities voted in favor of the measures. In fact, many of the largest agricultural counties in California voted majority yes on this proposition last year. So this is something that really bridges the political spectrum. People want to see animals treated well, and that doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or urban or rural. We all share that same common value.
There is something, though, to pointing out that, say, in California, Colorado, you have a lot of people who are more conscious of or more organized into an environmental sort of movement. You find more people who are into organic farming and those kinds of things. Public opinion there may have been very much in favor of making those changes. The same might not be true here in Ohio.
I think that the polling shows otherwise, but also, I mean, we're looking at states like Arizona and Florida that have enacted these reforms. But at the same time, the polling is pretty clear in Ohio that Ohioans overwhelmingly would favor this measure, really by a 2-to-1 margin, whether it's polling that's been done by researchers like Lake Research, the American Farm Bureau Federation's own polling on the topic, and even OSU in 2005 did a poll of Ohioans showing that more than 80% of them think that the suffering of farm animals is very important to them and they want to see it alleviated.
Keith, if public opinion here in Ohio is tending toward wanting to see a change in how farmers handle their livestock and poultry, wouldn't it make sense for the Farm Bureau Federation to encourage their membership to make a change?
It depends a lot on how you ask the question. I'll share with you that polling would also indicate that this idea of a comprehensive board also is widely supported by Ohioans. So the question is, how do you want to approach the issue? Do you want to focus on narrow questions of particular practices, or do you want to pull together farming and animal science expertise and begin to think through how we want to approach food production and animal care in the state of Ohio? I think we have a pretty positive idea here, and I would say again that I think HSUS, if they're thinking this through, would say, you know what, we have caused the debate in the state of Ohio to reach a new level, and they have, and I will give them that, and they should say, you know, this panel is an interesting idea. Let's let it work for 3 or 5 years and see how it goes and see what we get in terms, you know, we get that it's stacked. We get it won't lead to meaningful reform. But yet that's prejudging a panel that's not even been formed yet.
Why not do that, Paul?
Well, I think that Keith is likely right that many Ohioans would be predisposed to voting in favor of this because if on its face it appears like a pro-animal amendment. I don't know whether voters will think it belongs in the Constitution or not, but it looks like it would provide for meaningful reform when in reality it just gives the appearance of that and it's more likely to enshrine the status quo. And the reason is because And the reason is, I mean, just look at what's happened in other states. Just for example, New Jersey did something similar a few years ago where they adopted a panel that was intended to look at animal livestock practices and figure out what would be so-called humane for treating them. And in the end, after years of looking at the issue, they came out and codified into law that every single standard industry practice was considered humane. That's how they defined it. Every standard industry practice was humane. They're trying this in other states as well. Right now in Michigan, the Farm Bureau there is trying to do a similar thing by codifying into law all of their standard industry practices. The point of these is to give the appearance of regulation when in reality it's more like the foxes guarding the hen house and just thwarting any type of meaningful reform that would improve the welfare of animals by phasing out these extreme forms of confinement that really are the biggest concern from an animal welfare perspective.
And Keith, you're shaking your head no.
Well, I don't know how you prejudge. The panel's not been formed yet. When we see who it is, it has to operate in the public eye. If it doesn't meet the smell test, I think Ohioans are pretty intelligent, and I think they'll understand that that meaning reform is not happening. But I have pretty good confidence that, in fact, in the state of Ohio, as we work as an organization, as an industry, to further engage consumers on where their food comes, because we recognize that they want to know more and more about where their food comes from. I think this is a very, very intelligent choice, a comprehensive choice, and one worthy of the state of Ohio.
Let's take a call now. This one is coming from Beth. Hello, Beth. You're on Open Line. You have a question or a comment for our guests?
Yes. Hi. Thanks for your program today. I really appreciate hearing the different perspectives.
You're welcome.
Thanks. I really didn't know too much about this issue until I saw it on the Oprah show. And personally, you know, it just made me a little uneasy. And my family has moved toward buying the, you know, meat and eggs from the free-ranging animals. But to the farm representative's point, the Humane Society is talking mostly about welfare. And my question is, could the guest from the Humane Society say a little bit more about food safety issues?
Sure. Well, thanks, Beth. Oftentimes, mistreating animals is not only bad for animals, but it's bad for us. And just to use the example of eggs just as an example, battery cage confinement of laying hens is not only cruel to the birds, but it also increases food safety risk. Study after study has shown that caged flocks of birds have higher incidences of salmonella than cage-free flocks of birds do. In fact, the European Food Safety Authority examined this issue comprehensively and concluded in a very unequivocal conclusion that caged flock holdings are far more likely to be contaminated with salmonella than cage-free hens are. And that's the reason why so many food safety groups endorse a ban on battery cages. For example, the Center for Food Safety, the Center for Science and the Public Interest, the Union of Concerned Scientists, these groups all endorse a ban on battery cages because they know that it's not only wrong for the animal welfare component, but it's bad for food safety as well.
And Keith?
I would just say that you may have those statistics on a national level or international level, but here in Ohio, we're one of just a handful of states that use the Egg Quality Assurance Program, and the incidence of salmonella has been going down every year since that program has been instituted, almost non-existent today.
All right. Beth, thank you for your question. This call is from Richie now. I'm sorry, Richie. Call us back. I just accidentally disconnected you. This call is from Larry. Hi, Larry. You're on Open Line.
Thank you for taking my call. You know, I'd like to ask Paul Shapiro here about their concern about scientific studies here. I know that McDonald's has announced that it is going to do an extensive study of caged hens, and they're going to be joined by the American Humane Association. the same as U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Veterinary Medical Association, and the Center for Food Integrity. And yet Humane Society of the United States chose not to be involved in that study. So it sounds like you choose your scientific studies that you think are going to be beneficial to your cause. And isn't your cause really to eliminate meat in our diets? Yeah. Now, I'm a hog producer, and I am insulted to think that you would think I treat my animals inhumanely and cruelly. And I invite you and all of your cronies to my farm to see how I treat my animals. And it just offends me to think that you're judging me and how I treat my animals.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Larry, thank you for your call.
Thanks, Larry. I appreciate your call, even if we have differing views. Let me respond to a few of the points that you bring up. The first is that, unfortunately, I think you may not have some of the facts straight about the McDonald's study, where the Humane Society of the U.S. was excluded from that study. It wasn't the other way around, where we refused to participate. But I'll be interested in seeing what their study finds. It won't be producing results for at least 2 years and probably more. At the same time, I think that there already have been a number of very comprehensive and exhaustive studies that have been done. And I've mentioned some of them, and there are far more, and I encourage you to look at them. We cite many of them and include many of them on our website at humanesociety.org, where you can go and look at what the science that's already been done on this. This isn't a new issue that just popped up in the last year or two and we need to do a lot of research. We're all for research, don't get me wrong, but there's already been an abundance of scientific evidence that's already been completed on this issue, and overwhelmingly, the preponderance of it points to the fact that we need to phase out these extreme forms of confinement. And Larry, I'm not making any assumptions about your farm. I don't know what your farm is like. I can't really say anything about it. But again, I do want to stress that I don't believe that these systems are used because anybody wants to be cruel to animals. But I do believe that we have a system where bad practices have become normalized in some cases, perhaps not in all, but in some cases, in these three particular cases, it's pretty clear that preventing animals even from being able to turn around and extend their limbs really is something that needs to go the way of the history books.
I just wanted to let our listeners know that Ohio State University really has a tremendous – in this area of research, in this area of dialogue, doing a lot in the way of researching animal behaviors. We've brought on a number of different professors to look at it. We're engaging the international community with the Animal Welfare Science Center and partnering with that out of Australia. So a lot going on here at Ohio State University relative to research and animal care. And I think that translates directly out to the farm through such programs as the Pork Quality Assurance Program, in which our Extension Service is out there working with farmers to help them understand appropriate levels, uses of antibiotics, feed, transportation of animals, and the overall handling of our livestock today. So Ohio is not running away from this issue, and in fact, I think we're a leader.
We have an email here from Kyle who says, as an Ohioan, I am really upset with the Humane Society of the United States for misrepresenting the issue and coming into our state to spend lots of money to shut down Ohio farmers and drive our food production to other states and other counties. What does Humane Society of the United States propose for jobs and the Ohio economy if we once again drive another industry out of Ohio? Paul?
Well, Kyle, thanks for the email. I guess we'll have to respectfully agree to disagree with the premise of your assertion. And I do want to say, when you say that HSUS is, quote, coming into Ohio, we have more than 400,000 Ohioans who are supporters of the Humane Society of the United States, probably one of the largest memberships for any charity in the state. We have staff full-time working in the state. So we are the largest animal welfare charity in the country, but we also have a presence here in Ohio. Now, I think that anybody can make apocalyptic claims about saying that giving animals enough space to turn around and extend their limbs will drive entire industries under. I mean, we've heard the same thing from so many industries. The auto industry said, oh, if you force us to put seatbelts in, we're all going to lose all of our manufacturing jobs to other countries. That didn't happen. I think there's a lot of scaremongering here with some of these claims. But I mean, if you just look at the egg industry, for example, I mean, their own economic analysis demonstrates that getting rid of battery cages, converting away from them and moving toward cage-free systems would increase production costs by less than a penny per egg. And that's the egg industry's own economic analysis produced out of University of California, Riverside by the nation's preeminent egg industry economist. So I think that there's a lot of scaremongering going on when you get into this issue, but the reality is that the claims that some people make about how draconian the economic consequences would be really don't hold water.
Go ahead.
Well, I'd just say an Ohio State University economist looking at putting the California-type reforms into the state of Ohio said that it would cost about 8,000 jobs in the state of Ohio. So that's one analysis. And that's a good question. I think it leads to why isn't Paul and the Humane Society of the United States trying to tackle this issue at the national level rather than a state-by-state strategy that puts individual states and the farmers in it at a comparative disadvantage? I think, why not deal with this at the national level in some way, shape, or form? That's always perplexed me.
How does the change, though, if you make the changes that Paul and the Humane Society have been talking about, how does that eliminate jobs?
Well, essentially, what we have in the way of egg production in the state, and we're number two in the country in egg production. Essentially, that the billions of dollars, about $3.5 billion of economic activity for the production alone, let alone the further processing that goes on with egg production, let alone the bakeries and other businesses that depend on that product out there in making their food products, basically they'll move to another state.
So you're saying that changing to a system that allows the hens more movement would cut down on the number of hens that you can raise and therefore cut down on the number of eggs you produce?
I think that all I'm saying is as we look at the economics of it right now, that cost factor that he talks about when we're talking about millions of eggs becomes millions and billions of dollars. And so businesses make that with the margins on farms today will make the decision to simply go elsewhere where those practices are allowed. And I just say if you're really serious about this, take the discussion to the national level.
And while Keith and I may agree to disagree on some of the economic issues, I would be overjoyed to go to Washington with him and lobby the Congress to enact these type of reforms. For better or for worse, the Farm Bureau, as it is in Ohio, is a very powerful interest group in Washington as well, and leads the charge to prevent these types of modest common sense reforms from getting enacted in the Congress. So the Farm Bureau is fighting this both at the state and the federal level because, I mean, quite frankly, they oppose in oftentimes agricultural regulation on principle, even something as modest as merely allowing animals to turn around and extend their limbs.
We've been talking to Keith Stimpert from the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and Paul Shapiro of the Humane Society of the United States about Ohio's proposal to create a statewide board to oversee the care of poultry and livestock in this state. We have a number of callers on the line. We were hoping to get Richie reconnected before we end, but let's take a call now from Megan. Hi, Megan. You're on Open Line.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I want to thank you guys for having this show. I think it's been really interesting. And I just quickly wanted to say that I find that the attempts by the Farm Bureau and the legislature to sort of codify these abusive conditions on farms is really disgusting. I mean, the abuses and the cruelty that happens on these factory farms is undeniable. And I know that as an Ohio voter, I would certainly support any measure that would allow these animals some freedom of movement, even the basic ability to move. It seems like such a common sense step. And I support the family farmers, the actual family farmers, many of whom are being put out of business by these massive factory farms, including my own family, which actually has never even supported any of these caging or confinement systems. And several of my family members have been put out of business recently because of factory farms moving into their communities. And they're not only now facing unemployment, but they're facing really poor air quality. And I'm wondering if the person from the Humane Society could talk a little bit about the connections between these massive factory farms and environmental degradation.
Okay, Megan, thank you.
Thanks, Megan. I think you're absolutely right. And I would also note, and just to respond to your question, there is a connection, just as with food safety, there's a connection between animal cruelty and environmental degradation. In fact, the Ohio Environmental Council has been leading the charge on this here in the state to point out some of the massive pollution problems that are caused in the local communities where some of these factory farms are set up. We're talking about air, water, and soil degradation. In fact, property values around these factory farms oftentimes decline because very few people want to live with that type of massive concentration of animals and, of course, their manure near them. That's one of the reasons why most of the environmental groups also support a ban on battery cages and gestation crates, including Sierra Club and Defenders of Wildlife, Greenpeace, and so on. They're virtually unanimous in their opposition to these types of extreme confinement practices.
Again, I'd point out that Ohio leads the way in terms of environmental protection. We have basically moved environmental permitting to the Ohio Department of Agriculture. And people might say, oh my, Fox Garden, the hen house again. But the fact of the matter is Ohio standards exceed federal standards, and we are indeed a model for environmental protection across the country. People look to us. Recently at a U.S. EPA hearing held here on campus on this transfer of authority, farmers shared with folks that under the Ohio EPA, they might see an inspector every few years. Under the Ohio Department of Agriculture, they see an inspector twice a year. And we have fly management programs. We have a number of different standards that go well beyond federal regulation in this area. So, you know, Paul's describing a world that's just not accurate here for the state of Ohio, where, again, we were leading the country in terms of environmental protection. And we have a panel of citizens and others who come together regularly to talk about how can we even make it better. So we have a flexible, dynamic program.
We have only a couple of minutes left. Let's get Richie's question in here. Hi, Richie. You're on Open Line.
Thank you. It's not a question. It's a comment. My one experience with the confined, concentrated animal feeding operation was when a tornado came in and tore apart the hen barns at Buckeye Egg Farm, which is in Johnstown, near Johnstown, Ohio. And it's since changed its name. It has new owners. Reporter, dozens of us went up there to try and rescue some of these birds that were mangled in these cages, and some still remained unmangled in cages. There wasn't a big difference. And a reporter for a radio station came up to me. He said, can you describe what this is like for our listeners? So I said, imagine if you were strapped into an airline seat for the rest of your life, and yes, you would have a flight attendant, you know, throw a pack of peanuts and a can of Coke in your lap every day, but you'd be sitting in your own excrement for the rest of your life, never being able to move. And I said, I realize I'm talking about non-humans here, and I'm a human. I said, but we're both members of the animal kingdom, and we should have some respect for other members of the animal kingdom. We're not members of the vegetable or the mineral kingdom, although some of us may have hearts of stone. But that was my comment, that we need to have respect.
All right, Richie, thank you very much. And we have, about 30 seconds left.
Richie, thanks so much for your call, and you're tenacious to get back through. And I'd say, one, thank you for going up there to help those birds. And two, I agree with your analysis that it's difficult to comprehend just how miserable it is to be forced to remain immobile for virtually your entire life. And I hope that we can phase those type of systems out.
And Keith, you get the last word.
Well, just
very quickly.
Paul has a modest proposal for reform. We have a modest proposal reform. A comprehensive panel that will look at livestock care and preserve local food production for Ohio's consumers.
I want to thank you both for being willing to come and talk to each other and to our listeners on Open Line. We've been talking to Paul Shapiro of the Humane Society of the United States and Keith Stimpert of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. I'm Charlene Brown. Open Line will continue in just a few minutes. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820 NPR News.